The Daily Connect Podcast.
Hello, it is the Daily Connect Podcast for Wednesday, the 26th of September, 2018. And it is Stephen Scott back with you once again for another podcast. Coming up, I'm going to tell you how you can get sporty this weekend in Cardiff if you live there. If you're blind or partially sighted, you've always thought about getting into sport, I've got a great idea for you for this weekend. But you have to be living in Cardiff. But don't worry, if you don't live in Cardiff, that's okay too, because there are other events coming around the country. And as well as that, we're going to be catching up with Elizabeth O'Hara. She is an RNIB Connect volunteer from Glasgow, and she tells us about her story of losing her vision, but many other complications that came along with it as well. Very difficult time for Elizabeth, but she's out of the tunnel now, which is the good news, and she's out and about, and she's volunteering, and she wants you to help her to do more. So that's on the way. But right now, we're going to find out more about National Eye Health Week this week. Ian Wilson kicks things off on the podcast with details of RNIB's new alliance.
Now, this is, of course, National Eye Health Week, and RNIB has been instrumental in developing new patient standards for the UK, which are launched at the same time. The standards aim to improve support for patients in eye clinics and have been developed by the UK Ophthalmology Alliance, of which RNIB is a member. Stevie Johnson is RNIB's clinical lead within the Eye Clinic Support Services team, and she joins me now to explain more. Stevie, first of all, thanks for joining us. Tell us, first of all, please, just what exactly is the UK Ophthalmology Alliance?
It is a group of eye care professionals, patient groups and national ophthalmic groups from across the UK. It's quite new. It was set up in 2017, and it brings together a large number of leads from eye departments and stakeholders such as the Royal College of Ophthalmologists, the College of Optometrists, the British and Irish Orthoptic Society, Getting It Right First Time, and us, RNIB.
Okay, so it brings together an awful lot of organisations there. Let's boil it down a little and just find out exactly what it does if we can.
By everybody working together, it develops best practice guidelines, pathways and standards. And it looks at ways of improving patient care while also identifying ways to save money.
Okay, so there's plenty going on with it. Spell out for us, please, Steve, if you will, just how RNIB particularly is involved in the alliance.
Well, we're one of the key stakeholders, and we have been from the very beginning. Specifically, we've been working with the alliance for almost a year now to develop these standards for patients. There are lots of different types of patient standards already in existence, but there wasn't anything specific to ophthalmology, so this is what we wanted to create.
Now, I know, of course, Stevie, that ECLOs are a vital part of the alliance, and people have heard the radio station especially refer to ECLOs before. Can you explain exactly, please, the role of an ECLO, and maybe we should begin with what ECLO actually stands for?
Yeah, ECLO stands for Eye Clinic Liaison Officer, and ECLOs are based in eye departments, and they provide a person-centred service to people of all ages who are affected by sight loss. So that includes relative carers and friends, and they offer information, practical advice and emotional support, and they empower people to access the support services that are available to them that they might not know about. They offer what we call an initial screening of needs. From that, they signpost or refer their clients to a wide range of services and organisations, and they also follow sort of specific referral processes to local services like sensory teams, rehabilitation and low vision. But very importantly, they act as a key contact person to support people, their families and carers, to find their way through the range of information and advice available. And they're also there for all stages of that journey, and they offer ongoing support as people need it.
It sounds as if it's a job that there's an awful lot of emotion involved in, because I'd imagine that it just must be so traumatic for patients to be told for the very first time that they are losing their sight, especially if in obviously some cases there's nothing they can do about it.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's an individual and people react in different ways, but it's fair to say that for most people it's a very difficult and traumatic time. Some people lose their sight suddenly. Others lose it over a longer period of time. But people tell us that common feelings at that time are shock and anger and fear for what it means for their future and for those around them. They may have worries about their job, their independence, how they're going to manage with everyday living. And it's so important to have someone there in the eye clinic to talk to explain that they're not alone. And there are services and organisations that can help. And knowing that the ECHO will be there in the future as well, if and when they need further support, is vital.
So let's come back then to the actual alliance that we were talking about at the beginning then, Stevie. It is, of course, as we say, National Eye Health Week. What will this alliance mean for patients overall, would you say?
A key principle behind the alliance is that patient representative organisations have a voice, and so patients themselves have a voice in setting these standards and pathways. And we also worked with this particular piece of work with the International Glaucoma Association to survey their members about what they wanted. So it's a really important way of ensuring that the patient's voice is heard and included in all the outcomes.
And of course, Stevie, we are coming up to, or should I say really, that RNIB is coming up to its 150th anniversary, all month of celebrations planned during the month of October. In this day and age, how much is this role a vital part of RNIB's future work, would you say?
It's very, very important. We've heard from our members that one of the key things they want is that emotional and practical support when they want it. And ECHOs are key in providing that, alongside some of our other services and our telephone support and our helpline and our sight loss advisors. It's a very important part of our future work.
RNIB instrumental then in developing new patient standards for the UK, which aim to improve support for patients in eye clinics throughout the UK. Stevie Johnson then from RNIB, many thanks for talking with us here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now, time to find out about an event that's happening this weekend. And it is for you out there if you are interested in or have a passing interest in getting into sport. Let's find out now about British Blind Sports Taster event that's happening in Cardiff. Alex Bibbs is here to tell us more about it.
They've been really successful this year. We've had over 300 participants attend the Have a Go Days that we've delivered throughout 2018. Over 95% of those that attended said that they had an enjoyable time. 100% said they felt safe, and the majority of them would attend an event like this again in the future. So I think that proves that it has been a really good series of events. It's really good for the local sort of community to come together. There's a chance for other vision impaired individuals to chat with people in a similar situation, and we also encourage friends and family to attend. So I think it's really good for just everyone to share experiences and discuss any advice that they need to talk about. We've got loads of sports in attendance, and the sports that we have on offer are those that are actually already providing some kind of activity for individuals with a visual impairment in the South Wales area. So on offer this Saturday we have judo, taekwondo, goalball, tennis, football, bowls and acoustic shooting. So a good selection of sports on offer to everyone on the day. So the event's being held this Saturday, the 29th of September, at Cardiff House of Sport. The postcode for that is CF118AW. The event starts at 12:30 and will finish at 5 p.m. If you want more information on that, just give myself an email, and that's Alex, A-L-E-X, at britishblindsport.org.uk, or you can give us a call on 01926 44 247. If you wanted to find out some more information online as well, you can visit our website, and that's www.britishblindsport.org.uk.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now time to meet Elizabeth O'Hara. Now, Elizabeth is an RNIB Connect volunteer, and she's been involved with the charity for some time, but it's not always been plain sailing for Elizabeth, as she told our own Barry Snell. But first up, she told us what RNIB Connect means to her.
The Connect Community Lead side is about trying to arrange things in my community for people within the community that have sight loss, or families that know anyone with sight loss. We've only had one meeting at the minute. There was two people there, but I'm looking to do it again and hopefully get more people involved within my local community, Southwest Glasgow to be exact. Over and above that, I'm doing some fundraising with Angela Preston, who is the fundraiser for the East. We don't have one imposed here in the West, so Angela does the whole lot. The woman's a marvel.
What are you doing?
I have, it's the 150th anniversary this year. So as part of that, helping to raise funds, I have a big card with 150 squares on it, and it's £1 a square for anybody who wants to buy one. Okay. Although I only have about 40 left. And within that, I had to collect prizes. So it was about asking people that I know within my community, business owners, to see if they would donate, so as I had something to give back to people And that's worked out very well. Over and above that, there's an event happening for diversity on the 20th of October, and that's all part of, again, of the 150th anniversary, and we're trying to fundraise for auction prizes and raffle prizes, and I've been doing a bit of that as well.
So you sound really busy. Does it keep you going?
It does. I like to be kept busy. I don't like to be bored. Getting into too much trouble if you're bored. So doing this with RNIB gives me a aim, gives me a goal, and I absolutely love it.
And Elizabeth, can you talk about your own sight loss, please? Because you were fully sighted, weren't you, until your early 40s, and you woke up one morning completely blind.
Literally woke up blind. Couldn't see. Couldn't understand it, because although I was insulin-dependent diabetic at the time, I had been from a retinal scan in October and woke up on the 27th of November completely blind. And I was like that until January, when I had my first operation.
And what was that like? Did you have family around?
At the time, I lived with my mum. I was caring for my mum, who was sick, and my daughter as well. My son had his own flat at the time, so there was the three of us in the house.
What did you think at the time, Elizabeth? Did you think it was temporary and you'd get your sight back?
Yes, I did think it was temporary until I seen a surgeon on the 23rd of December, and he said, no, he says, you'll be blind for life. He said, I can say two things, you'll never drive a car again and you'll never read a book. And I remember at the time saying to him, you can have my car keys, but trust me, I will read a book because I'm an avid reader and I love my books.
So you're now using talking books?
No, not exactly. I can still read very large print. Okay. And I will keep doing that for as long as possible before I get onto the talking books.
What kind of books do you like?
Any kind.
Anything?
Anything at all. I read so much different. I love biographies. I love reading about people and their lives. The same as I love meeting people and hearing about their lives. So.
And you'd been a social worker up until that point?
I was. I worked in foster and adoption before I lost my sight. And I don't work in that field anymore because, for me, I needed my sight. That's what helped with assessment purposes. And I think it would be too dangerous for me to do the kind of job I did with the sight loss I have.
Did you enjoy that role?
I loved it.
I'm adopted myself.
Right. I absolutely loved my job. Mm-hmm. Really and seriously loved my job. Adoption is very difficult for everybody concerned with babies that I worked with. So they didn't see that, obviously, that's later in life where that will impact on them. Mm-hmm. But as babies, with the parents that had to give up their children, with the other siblings that were there that maybe had to lose a sibling, and with the new foster, if not adoptive parents, it's difficult for everybody. But you get there, and the joy at the end of it, you know, for the baby is amazing.
So did you have to give up this role almost immediately?
Yes. I was sick for a year before I lost my sight.
Right.
I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me.
Linked?
Yes. It turned out I was in renal failure and I needed a kidney and pancreas transplant, which I was very fortunate and got.
Now, every cloud has a silver lining. I believe this helped clear up your diabetes altogether.
Yes. New pancreas, shiny new pancreas. And yes, it helped. And I am no longer insulin dependent.
Now, this is fairly recent, Elizabeth. It's only 8 years or so ago. I believe you went to Spain after that to help you recuperate.
I did. From 2016 to 2017, I was back and forth. I absolutely loved it. It was a brilliant experience. I went on my own, never been to where I went before.
Right.
Had great people around me, though. I wanted to live in Spain and the village side of it, the Spanish part of it. Didn't want to do the expat part. I wanted to get the whole Spanish vibe, if you like.
The whole experience.
Yes.
And did it allow you to have that time to think about the future?
It was great. Didn't have a TV. Lived with music and books. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I'm going to say it was just chilled. But that's, I don't even know if that describes it. It was just brilliant.
What were you using for mobility at that time?
A white cane. My guide dog got retired literally 2 weeks before I left to go to Spain.
Okay.
She suffered from nervous anxiety, God love her. She's a family pet now. We kept her.
What's her name?
Evie.
Evie.
Yeah.
Okay. And when you lost your sight, Elizabeth, did you make use of the help from charities such as RNIB from the very beginning?
Yeah, I lost my sight November 2010. But I lived in a bubble thereafter because I was on dialysis and on the waiting list for my transplant. So I was really ill with dialysis. I wasn't one of these people that was able to get up and get out and continue on with a normal life. A lot of time the dialysis didn't work for me, which was an issue. I was at the top of the transplant list. I was told in the December 2011, basically, I'm a match for less than 2.5% of the population. Chances of me getting a transplant were very, very, very limited.
That must have been pretty disheartening.
It was, to say the least, because we knew my mother was ill and we knew it was going to be the last Christmas with her. Funnily enough, worry no failure. And it was kind of a worry that the same thing maybe will happen with myself. However, on the 11th of January 2012, I got a phone call from the transplant team to go to Edinburgh and get my new organs.
Sure.
And I never looked back. From thereafter, my life just changed. I was able to get about after a certain period of time. I've never looked back. What happened was my mum died, and after my sisters and my family had kind of left to start on their own lives, it was about a week later, and I remember sitting there thinking, I can't go out the front door. I'm here on my own. What do I do? So I phoned social work department, and someone came out very quickly because I was isolated and was on my own, and gave me long cane training. But she also mentioned about a group that was called Moving Forward at the time that RNIB ran, and I came along to that group, and from there I became involved, started volunteering, and again, I've did it ever since, in different ways, with RNIB.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Now to a story that crossed the path of one of our producers here. Barry Snell joins me now to tell us more about it. Hi, Barry. Thank you for coming in, and tell us about the story that you found.
Yeah, thanks, Stephen. I found the story online, and I thought I'd chase it up. Basically, it's a story about a woman called Katie Orton. Katie founded an organisation to help blind and partially sighted dogs. Here's Katie to explain.
We rescue blind and partially sighted dogs from the UK and all over Europe as well. So dogs who, for whatever reason, have lost their sight. They may have been born blind, so it could be from breeders in the UK, or it could be through cruelty in Europe. So, and we find them loving homes. We get them the treatment they need, make sure they're safe, and then find them loving homes in the UK.
I asked Katie how she ended up doing this.
I was lucky enough to work in the Cayman Islands for a couple of years, many years ago, and I adopted a blind dog who had been blinded in an acid attack. And I'd never had a blind dog before, but she was absolutely incredible. She would swim in the sea with me, and I really realised how, you know, what an incredible life blind dogs could have. And sadly, when she died, I tried to adopt another blind dog, but was told by quite a few charities that they wouldn't probably would euthanise the blind dogs. They didn't think they would have a very good quality of life. So I thought it was such a shame that people didn't realise, you know, how amazing they can be. So I set up Blind Dog Rescue UK, and we've been rescuing blind dogs ever since.
Katie went on to explain to me the different kinds of dogs and varying eye conditions that they have that end up in her care.
So we have dogs who maybe through neglect have conditions like glaucoma, so untreated very high eye pressure, which is very painful, so we need to get that treated straight away. Sometimes they may need their eyes removed. In general, if they've been you know, sort of very poorly cared for or not cared for at all, they could be street dogs or shelter dogs. They can be very underweight and just need just a few months of TLC, really, and really find out what life in comfort is like, rather than kind of going from meal to meal that could be weeks apart. Dogs can also suffer from cataracts and go blind from cataracts. They can have detached retinas, the same as in people, which I believe can be treated in humans but not in dogs. So there are lots of conditions that are exactly the same in people that would cause partial or full blindness in dogs.
Stephen, some of the stories I read about the dogs that Katie ended up looking after were shocking. There was one story in particular which was quite distressing to hear about.
Little Freddy was found on a rubbish dump in Bulgaria, and he's a tiny little dog, so really not able to fend for himself at all. He was incredibly thin, had lots of skin infections, but he also had both of his eyes were missing. So we don't really know how that's happened, or you know, whether that was done through, you know, deliberate cruelty. And we certainly have had incidents of deliberate cruelty where we've known exactly what's happened to the dog. And it was a case of getting him obviously out of there as quickly as we could and to the vets. And then he came very quickly to adoption and is a very, very happy dog now. But we do have lots of dogs who perhaps are hit by cars. Some dogs are beaten really badly, so they have really horrific injuries.
You would think that the dogs would never come back from such a traumatic experience.
But what is amazing about them is they don't seem to lose the ability to trust. So, you know, even though they have been horribly treated, you know, they still have the capacity to trust us again and trust us to give them, you know, the best future. So there certainly are dogs who are scarred by what's happened physically and mentally. But I'd say, you know, in the main, most of them are very, very resilient to what has happened and they do very well.
It was very clear to me during the interview that Katie loved what she did.
I'd say the best thing about it is being able to see a picture of a dog that's hundreds of miles away and actually know that we can make funds available, we can make sure that that person who's right there with that dog, who has no options of an RSPCA or anything like that, can take that dog to the vet, know that we will sponsor all the costs, and then that there will be a home at the end of it, because there are hundreds of dogs and they, you know, they can't take them all on single-handedly, so they really do need our help.
Now, of course, it's important that people support the charity as they don't get any government money to help them do what they do. I asked Katie how any of us could support them.
We've got lots of ways people can support us. People can volunteer with us. People can also donate if you don't have the time. All of those funds that we raise, we're completely volunteer-based, so every single penny goes to helping more and more blind dogs. If you visit us on the website, it's www.bdruk.org. You'll find we can take PayPal donations, or you can send us a cheque, or you can donate by back. So lots and lots of ways to donate.
You can hear more of that interview on our Audioboom channel and on our social media networks as well.
Thanks, Barry. A horrific story, but well worth telling. Thank you for that. That's it for the podcast today. Back tomorrow from 5 on the podcast, as always, here on the Daily Connect, and also live on air from 10 till 12. Join me if you can. We've got the news review coming up, lots of interesting stories on that, and lots more besides. Check us out from 10 o'clock tomorrow on RNIB Connect Radio.
The Daily Connect Podcast.